Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
So this is the first year of my life, as most of you know, that I've had to wear readers. And I love them.
Yeah.
I tried contacts for about 30 seconds. Dan tried to put contacts in my eyes for a little bit longer.
That was a time.
Contact experiment for Dana was a dumpster fire, and we're not going to go back to that. I love my readers. How long have you had glasses, Dan, and can you see up close or not?
I am nearsighted, which means I can see up close, and I have worn glasses since I was 6 years old.
So I am farsighted. I can see everything far away.
Yeah, but you can't see anything in front of
me. I can't see anything right in front of me. And Sam?
Stumbling over everything.
You've always had glasses, right?
No, I got glasses probably 2 months after I started here because I was reading on a computer screen for 8 hours a day.
I did not know that because you're young to have that happen. Well, Sam found this story.
I can see just fine. It's just a computer screen.
Yeah. And it's one of those, you know, we see a lot of headlines that come across our tablets and phones and computers and stuff. And as we sift through what we want to share with our listeners, and he found this and I did a double take. It's one of those stories that when you see the headline, you're like, wait, what? No. And this is from CNN, but you can find this anywhere. One in three children worldwide is now nearsighted, meaning they can see up close, can't see a darn thing far away. One in three. When did this start? Why did this start? And we are thrilled to have pediatric ophthalmologist Dr. Emily Brocksterman joining us. Thank you so much for your time. I know how busy you are. I cannot believe this headline or that we missed this headline. It's probably not a surprise to you, given what you do for a living.
Yeah, so thank you for having me. I appreciate being on the show. This is something that we've been trying to raise awareness in the United States, but really worldwide, for several years. If you look over in the southeastern country or the Southeast Asian countries like China, Taiwan, Singapore, they have levels that are up to almost 90% in some of those countries as far as their levels of myopia in children. So it's a worldwide problem, and it's just now starting to take hold here in the United States.
Why?
So studies, there's no direct correlation to say this is 100% the reason. But most of the research has suggested it's because our lifestyle for the children has changed.
Yeah.
If you look a generation ago, two generations ago, young children spent their time outside, running around, distance activities. And now you look at children and most of the time is spent indoors, whether it's iPads, screen time, and even just reading, the level of homework they have, reading activities. We don't do all those distance activities anymore and we don't spend as much time outside. And so the thought is that change is what has sparked this rise in myopia.
So does that suggest that kids' eyes are not learning to see distance?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So what they think happens in these young children is that as they grow older, the eye actually elongates more than what it typically or traditionally would. And so as that eye gets longer, where the light focuses in the eye is progressively farther away from where it's supposed to be, and you need a higher glasses prescription to fix that. And so they think it's because the eye is actually growing and getting longer, which may be stimulated by all the near activities we're doing.
How do children come into your clinic then? How, especially with young children, do you figure out as a parent that this is now an issue?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, older school age children, you get the classic complaints, they're squinting at the board, things like that.
Yeah.
Most of the time, this is detected on screening exams, that most children don't have symptoms. And that's why it's important to do those screening exams with a pediatrician, with the schools. And even if you have a family history of it, bringing your kids in to be seen. We see kids since birth on up, and we can detect visual impairment in kids as young as, you know, babies before they're even a year old. And so once you know about it and once it's on your radar, you have the ability to intervene and try to prevent them from getting to these high levels.
And doctor, is there any, this seems like a ridiculous question, but we've obviously seen the trend shift with the lifestyle habits. Can we shift our lifestyle habits back to more outdoors? And will we see a shift back to less nearsightedness, I guess?
That's the hope. There's all sorts of campaigns worldwide to try to raise the level of awareness for countries all over the world. Once you've developed that level of myopia, there's no way to take it back. So a child that's already gotten to a high level of myopia, we can try to slow it down and keep it from progressing more, but we can't turn the tide and reverse that dial. But if we can make systemic changes, the idea would be the global trend would be that we see in future generation, in future years, less children with those high levels of myopia.
It's fascinating and sad at the same time. I think this is one of those stories, doctor, that people, once you read what's happening, most people really aren't going to be that surprised. But I think society should be sad, especially for kids in lower income households where they might not have access to the care that would catch this. I don't even know if they still do eye exams in schools anymore.
Most pediatricians' offices will do them starting at 1 year of age, just a little camera screening exam. That's usually what happens. The challenge is there's some kids that don't get brought to the pediatrician on a regular basis, or they're homeschooled, or they're in a school district that just doesn't have the resources for it. And so there are a lot of kids out there that get missed, and this doesn't get picked up until, you know, that we're kind of behind the eight ball and trying to play catch up.
I'm going to ask you to look in your crystal ball a little bit. We know early onset myopia can lead to all kinds of more serious vision problems later. Do you see a scenario where in 20 years or 40 years, we have a soaring population of people in the United States with, you know, glaucoma or cataracts or going blind?
I think there's potential for if we don't change the tide and those numbers increase and we follow the suit of, you know, those Southeast Asian countries that have those, you know, 90% rates of myopia in children, I think that's possible. The thing about myopia now is that there are things, if we detect it early, we have things that we can do. It doesn't stop it completely, but we have treatments that can slow that progression down to try to prevent kids from ending up with a high myopia. And so we have treatments available. The challenge is getting those children in early enough to detect it, to be able to put them on those treatments.
Do you know, doctor, was the same true for adults after the advent of the personal computer? If you go back in history, when as adults, we all started looking at screens at work, and I don't even know when that was, 30 years ago, something like that. Was there also a shift in the adult population, or is this something that has just impacted the little ones?
It's mostly with the little ones. Yeah. The children up to the age of around eight or so, that's when the part of their brain that's in charge of vision is growing and developing. And so that brain is much more elastic and plastic and pliable. And so these environmental impacts are much greater on that developing brain. And that's part of the reason that they have such high levels of progression is because they're growing, they're developing, and that brain is just much more sensitive to some of these changes.
So when my mom used to say, you're sitting too close to the TV, if you keep doing that, you're going to go blind, she was kind of right.
Kind of.
I love it. Dr. Emily Brocksterman with the University of Kansas Health System, a pediatric ophthalmologist. And I wish we were speaking with like great news about our children, but I don't think folks are going to be surprised. We're going to take some calls on this. And we thank you so much for your time, doctor.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Be well. 913-586-7798. Have you seen this in your own children, or are you in education? Are you starting to see this in the classroom if your school still does the vision test? Remember that? When we were growing up, you would get this spoon. They would have a plastic spoon. And you would put the big spoon over one eye, and you'd have to read the little things
they
on that thing. But do schools do it?
In the nurse's office, they most certainly do. Well, at least they did 10 years
we
ago.
We used to have to also take our shirts off for the scoliosis test, which I think, looking back, someone should be jailed
and
for
we
that.
Used to eat those little red tablets that would make your mouth red. And you knew who wasn't brushing.
Look who doesn't brush their teeth.
Mm-hmm. I can tell you that when I was in school, they also still did the scoliosis check. You just left your shirt on. They felt your spine.
So invasive. 913-586-7798. And we will take your calls on this straight ahead. You are listening to Dana and Parks. So not only is there the issue with not seeing clearly now for a third of children worldwide.
Even without rain.
And my God, almost 90% of them have the issue in Asia. Can you believe that? I looked it up. She's absolutely right.
It is. It's the generation of screens being 6 to 8 inches from your face. Kids are getting cell phones younger and younger, and before they have a cell phone, they have their very own iPad. We are the iPad generation.
Well, they're actually recommending for kids who are still young, whatever that means, delay smartphone and social media use for as long as possible. It works best if you can coordinate with other parents, as peer pressure is a big reason why kids start. You know that. Well, everyone else has a phone, and I'm 9 years old, and I don't have a phone. You know, we've all heard that.
I got mine at 13,
yeah.
And I thought my mom was the absolute devil.
Worst.
Because she made me wait until 13 years old.
I think our kids got phones at 12. It's been so many years, I don't remember. But not only do we have issue with nearsightedness, listen to this. Virtually every parent of a young child has experienced outbursts of anger and frustration from their toddlers, whether it's time to get up, go to bed, or eat a sandwich. According to a new study, there's another possible reason for the frequency of a child outburst, and it is tablet use. The new study published in the journal Pediatrics shows that child tablet use at 3.5 years old was associated with a higher number of expressions of anger and frustration a year later. In addition, children who were more prone to anger and frustration at 4.5 years old were more likely to still have higher tablet use a year later, meaning instead of correcting the behavior, we're shoving the tablets at them to quiet them down. That's how I read that. Early childhood tablet use may contribute to a cycle of problems in emotional regulation, according to the authors of the study. It's one of these things I just don't think we should be surprised by any of this.
Oh, absolutely not. I was not surprised in any way, shape, or form when I saw this study. And I think this one, personally, and just my own opinion, is a much bigger issue than the nearsightedness. The nearsightedness we can correct by going to an eye doctor, right? When you can't control the anger emotion because you've never been taught to control the anger emotion, that can blow up, literally, for lack of a better term, into something much worse when you get older.
Been a lot of research on this topic that culminated in the United States with the Surgeon General issuing an advisory warning this year. Remember this? Warning parents of the dangers of tablet use, social media. You know, we know about the bullying. We know about the anorexia rates are up, all of that stuff. And we've created this. Let's go to Bruce in Raytown. Hi, Bruce.
Yes. Actually, farsightedness can be corrected with glasses. And I've been farsighted since I was 12 years old. I've had glasses ever since. And I have a friend that just swore against glasses. He was too vain to wear glasses all the time, but he had these stupid readers off and on his face. He probably went through in his lifetime, he's dead now, but he's probably gone through probably 50 or 60 or 70 pairs of readers that he kept dropping and losing and breaking them. Everybody ought to have their eyes tested. And I guarantee you, if you're farsighted, glasses will really help. And
so you said, Bruce, that the glasses and even for children would correct the problem. I think it brings your eyesight more into alignment where it should be. I don't know that I agree with the use of the word correct, because what I heard the doctor say was, once we do this, especially in children who are still growing before age 8, 9, their ocular muscles and all of those things are still growing, you can't put that genie back in the bottle.
Well, my eyes haven't changed hardly at all, as far as every year I get my eyes tested and get new glasses. And they haven't changed hardly at all for 30 years.
But without the glasses, you wouldn't be able to see far away.
I can see far away, but it's clear. It's more clear. I can look at signs. And I tested my friend with, you know, I've known him for all my life. Since I was 16 years old, I knew the man. And we sat one time looking out a window at a motel where we were staying, and I asked him what he could see, and he couldn't see nearly as well farsighted as I could, but, you know, because I have glasses. And I took them off, and it was about equal to his. And, you know, it's just the fact that if you get your eyes tested, you won't have to use those stupid readers. But some people, he said, I'm too vain to wear glasses. I can't wear them all the time.
Oh, I love glasses, Bruce. I love my glasses. And I've been told, I'm not opposed to LASIK. I don't know that I would do it if I could. And it's a non-starter because I've been told I am not a candidate for it. And I don't know if that's just because I'm farsighted or I don't know why, but I've been told LASIK is not for me. It's not going to fix my need for using readers.
Well, and to Bruce's point, and I think it's this way for a lot of people, and I jokingly blame this job for the fact that I have glasses and the fact that I was staring at computer screens for 8 hours a day. It's a joke. I'm sure that I had trouble seeing before. My brain was just able to overcome it until I went in and actually got tested.
And dealt with it. Let's go to Joe in Riverside. Hey, Joe.
How's it going today?
Hi, good. Go ahead.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. I've been nearsighted forever, and finally I was in getting my eyes checked, had my wife get hers checked. Oh, I don't need glasses. I don't need glasses. Next thing you know, they immediately put her in bifocals.
Okay, you have to remind me what that is.
That's where you have to have correction for distance and up close.
Oh, God. I tried, Joe, and thank you for the call. I tried the progressives, where if you look one way, it does one thing.
No.
Progressives worked for me for about 30 seconds until I had to climb a set of stairs.
And all of a sudden, you can't see the stairs in front of you.
I could not climb stairs. And I was like, this is not going to work.
Yeah.
913-586-7798. When we come back, we have an update on a case that made global headlines out of Overland Park involving a mummified relative. And remember at the time we reached out to the DA's office and said, what crime is this?
And they said the crime is not the relative.
Yeah, well, I remember one of the things they said was, Sam, we've never seen this. Yeah. We had to look it up.
The crime is not the fact that the relative was there and mummified. It was for
other things.
Yeah.
There is somewhat of a resolution in that really awful case. And I remember it was the police department that said, we have never seen anything like this. We actually had to look up the law. Mm-hmm. We don't know what we're dealing with here, except there's a mummy in this house.
Before we get to that, when you get a chance, go to KMBZ.com and check out Tossin' for Tails. The Dana and Parks Cornhole Tournament is coming back on October 19th at Serve, 91st and Medcalf, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We're allowing 100 teams of two, for $50 a team. All of the proceeds go to KC Pet Project. You can also get a spectator pass if you want to just watch and not play. Those are $10 and can be purchased online or at the door. Everything is run by the Midwest Cornhole League. It is certified, so it will count towards your cornhole score if you are one of those really, really good players. Like I said, Saturday, October 19th, Tossin' for Tails at Serve, 91st and Metcalf, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sign up at KMBZ.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events. Major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I had been waiting for an update on this really bizarre, awful story that, you know, if I'm going to tell you this, if you ever from time to time feel like you just don't have your life together, you know, that you're
really just feeling down on yourself that day.
Maybe you there's laundry in the laundry basket,
dishes in the sink.
You hate your job.
Crumbs on the carpet.
All of the things. You've got one kid that's acting a little wonky.
Every light seems to be red.
Yeah, you just feel like you
just a bad day.
Don't have it going on.
Yeah.
I want you just please remember, as bad as you think your life is, I want you to remember the Ritters. Just remember this story. And girl, let me tell you, your life is fine.
Well, it could be worse.
A couple accused of concealing the death of a family member inside of an Overland Park home for 6 years while stealing more than $200,000 in fraudulent benefits paid out on his behalf have pleaded guilty to wire fraud and theft. These are federal charges.
That's good.
They are federal.
At least they've admitted to their crimes.
The mummy was inside the house, Sam.
Fully mummified.
Not sure we need an allegedly here.
Still laying on the back.
As part of the plea agreement filed in U.S. District Court for the District of Kansas, September 22nd, Lynn and Kirk Ritter, age 61, pleaded guilty to the counts of wire fraud and theft of government funds and agreed to pay restitution, I'll believe that when I see it, of nearly $150,000 in Social Security payments and around $70,000 from the deceased man's Sprint retirement plan.
Yeah, to pay restitution, you first have to have money.
Correct. Both are scheduled to be sentenced in December, and we will let you know what this brings.
Now, this case was wild. We found out in the probable cause that it was one of the parties that wanted to keep the death hush-hush.
And one was tired of having a dead guy in the house.
And the other one was like, what in the heck are we doing? He smells.
Okay. So I think at the time police uncovered this, there was nothing left.
And he was fully decomposed.
We asked police. He was fully mummified. Okay. Right. So here's the story. Authorities learned of the death of the woman's father. It was Lynn Ritter's father.
Correct.
Who was 81 years old.
Now, they had been living in the home for a number of years, taking care of him.
Having parties with the grandkids over. Having birthday parties while he was dead in a back bedroom.
Before he died, they lived there taking care of him.
Taking care might be a stretch. Anyway, authorities learned about the death of 81-year-old Mike Carroll after her husband, Kirk, who's also been charged and pleaded guilty, told police in October of 2022 that Carroll had died and his body remained at the home. Lynn, wife, had served as a caretaker until the elder Mike Carroll died of, you remember this, Sam, it was a natural causes death.
And I believe, if I remember correctly, that police thought that when he called to report the death, they thought it was
like he had just died.
A fresh death.
Correct.
Not a 6 years ago, he's still in the back bedroom. Maggots have already come and
gone. With his mail piled up around his body.
Well, you know, wanted to make sure that he got his mail.
So police found Carroll's remains in a mummified state in the bed at his home. Authorities later determined that 6 years prior, he had died July 1st, 2016. And you know how that they figured that out?
Mm-hmm.
The pacemaker was still there with the remains. And when they went back and looked at that pacemaker, the pacemaker heart stopped July 1st, 2016.
Yep.
That's how they knew he had been there 6 years.
Had not struck a beat in 6 years.
Overland Park police initially investigated the case as a suspicious death. The Johnson County Medical Examiner officer later figured out that it was natural causes. I still don't understand this. A family member told the Kansas City Star last year that they did call and they did say, hey, can I talk to dad? Other family members. Hey, can I talk to my uncle? And that Lynn and Kirk always had some excuse. Well, he can't come to the phone right now. He doesn't
taking
feel
a
like,
nap.
Yeah, he's taking a nap. He doesn't feel like talking to you right now.
He's sick.
And apparently, you remember, the relatives were out of state.
Right.
And so it wasn't like they could just pop over and be like, all right, we want to see dad. What is going on? Why have we not heard from him?
Except for the times that they had family over to have parties at the home.
6 years.
Yeah.
And we talked to Overland Park Police about this and said, like, is it a crime to just keep a body? And it's such an unusual case that they kind of had to look like, is that a crime? Can you just keep a dead person in your house? And as I recall, there was nothing specific, Sam, to say that that is expressly illegal. What's illegal is they kept cashing his checks.
Now, there is a like neglect of a corpse or it something would,
no,
like
no, no,
that.
No. It was abandonment of a corpse.
But they didn't abandon it.
They did not abandon whatever you want to call it. It was the opposite of abandonment. It was keepament.
In fact, they kept throwing the mail at it.
I It is one of the most bizarre stories, and this is saying a lot, that we have covered on the Dana and Parks program over the years. But again, they took a plea deal. It doesn't say here what they could face for federal wire fraud and theft of government funds. I mean, the government's never getting that money back, let's be honest. It's over $230,000. That money is long gone, like Mr. Carroll. God love him.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were living off of that funding.
And then do you remember, Sam, the house had been boarded up. You have to go back and look up that address. Someone, I'm assuming, bought that house.
Yes, I believe it has since sold.
Would you want to know?
That there was a guy rotting in the back room for 6 years?
Yep.
No, I don't think I would want to know. I think it would be really weird when I found out, because inevitably, probably at some point I would find out, you know, talking to neighbors like, hey, did you know that the people who lived here before kept their dad in there for 6 years?
The USA Today picked this up. Like, this went global for all of the wrong reasons when this happened. I don't know if it was a natural death. I don't know that would bother me because, you know,
it's not like he was viciously murdered in cold blood.
Right. That would bother me.
Yeah.
If it was a natural death in the home, and, you know, the houses are getting older around here, there's not that much dirt left for brand new construction unless you're knocking stuff down in Prairie Village. Chances are, if your home's 30, 40, 50 years old, there has been something happening in that house.
From the text line, I don't think they did anything wrong. It's not the government's money they were spending.
But it was the government's money they were spending.
But it was rightfully his.
In life, you don't get to keep cashing Social Security checks after you're dead.
From the text line, you think it's hard to get the smell of cat pee out of a house.
Okay. Speaking of,
that would be a total teardown and redo.
I hit the veterinarian lottery today, and let me tell you why. One of the two cats, it appears, has a UTI. I won't get into it. Just trust me when I say I know. And there is almost no way to figure out if you have two animals, which one is having a problem.
Was there orange Gatorade in the litter box?
Yeah, without talking about it, trust me when I just tell you that's what it was.
Okay.
And so this morning, I had to flip a coin. And I called the veterinarian, and I said, here's the deal. Now is not the best time for me to be dealing with something like this with a house that has sat on the market for 96 billion days. But one of my two cats has an issue. If I bring one of them in, can you very quickly discern if this is the one having the issue? And if it's not, do not touch that animal. I will come back. I will get the animal. I will go back, get the other animal, and bring the other one in. I hit the Powerball of the veterinary world today because the one that I put in the carrier and took in,
right?
Thank God, is the one that has the UTI.
I wish Powerball were 50-50 because I'd be winning money all the time.
I have never been so happy to get a call from a veterinarian ever that said, yeah, your cat's got an issue. Fine. Absolutely fine. And thank you for it. I haven't gotten the bill yet. But at least I don't have to take the other cat
going
in.
Going back to our Overland Park decomposition room from the text line, if I die at my kid's house, I hope they keep me there and get the money.
Okay.
Sounds like a great way to provide for them after my death.
That is fraud. And
don't do that, people.
They can do that, but they will end up wearing orange for a while. They're going to probably get...
Well, they took the plea deal, so they're not...
I'm guessing 5 years.
20.
Oh, I don't think it's 20.
Before the plea deal.
I think she'll get 5. I think she'll get 5, and he might get suspended sentence. I really do.
He has to try to prove that it was her coercing him.
Yes, he was in the house, but
yeah.
I think she was the daughter, which says to me she's the caretaker.
Well, and he said in the phone, in the court record...
I can't take it anymore.
Yeah, he said, I can't do this. Please
anymore.
Come get him.
Yeah. I think she gets 5 years and he gets suspended sentence.
All right.
We'll let you know what happens in December. Okay, speaking of urine. There is a case out of New York that they have labeled the piss bandit. I'm only going to say that word once, but that's what they call it. Someone...
The urine bandit.
...has been, quote, ticking off the rich in California. Every few days, a mysterious figure in a mask and latex gloves carries bottles of urine to an affluent neighborhood, carefully arranges them on a utility box, and then vanishes into the night. Known as the, quote, urine bandit, for the past 6 years, he's left his mark on Pasadena with soda bottles, juice cartons, and even gallon jugs full to the brim with yellow liquid. No one knows his identity, and he taunts the locals with notes and drawings scrawled on his bottles, labeling it human urine, HIV positive.
Now, this is, he's not taunting all of Pasadena. He's just specifically taunting one small neighborhood because for whatever reason, he has keyed on this one utility box on this one street corner that he has decided that he is going to drop off his product.
If that's in fact what it is, I don't know if they've tested it, and nor would I want to go anywhere near it.
Yeah, but let's not.
Grant Yensura and his filmmaking partner, Jarek Milton, have launched a months-long investigation to try to figure out who is behind this. They think he is not as much a disgusting vandal, but a vigilante artist, and his art is leaving that sample in a neighborhood. Now, look, I love art as much as the next person. I don't know that that is protected speech as art if you are leaving biohazard material in
a neighborhood.
He's
dedicated to his service.
It's disgusting.
Whatever that service may be.
913-586-7798.
Is there anything illegal about that? It's not vandalism. It's in a bottle. Littering?
We're back with much more Straight Ahead. Stick with us. All right. Speaking of retro, thank you for the song, Sam.
You're welcome. What? I mean, it's old, but does that make it retro?
You know what else is old? Whooping cough. Oh, wait. No, now it's back.
Whoop.
We are not making this a topic. It makes me so mad. But we have a whooping cough case confirmed at Blue Springs High School. Jackson County Public Health has confirmed a case of pertussis at Blue Springs High School, commonly known as whooping cough. Symptoms include a running nose, mild cough, and severe coughing fits. Pertussis is a contagious respiratory illness that may initially seem like a common cold, quoting here from the director of Jackson County Public Health. The disease can have very serious complications, especially for infants and those with chronic health conditions like asthma. Health department and school district are working together to prevent further infections. they advise early antibiotic treatment and, I don't know, vaccines.
It is a rare condition, just under 200,000 cases in the U.S. per year.
Mm-hmm.
It is highly contagious, so right. When one person gets it,
I think
other people get it.
Where I was going to go with this without making this a topic is that whooping cough back in, 50s, 60s, 70s,
yeah,
killed people. I mean, it started, by the way, way back. I just looked this up in Paris in 1578.
It is potentially deadly if you have breathing issues,
yes.
If you are an infant, if you are elderly.
It is a very telltale sound when you are coughing. The vaccine for whooping cough was developed in the 1940s. The widespread use of that vaccine reduced the incidence globally of the disease by 75%. Despite having a vaccine, whooping cough has seen a resurgence due to a rise in families choosing not to vaccinate.
Vaccines aren't for everybody.
Gonna leave that there.
Yeah.
Please vaccinate. That's great. We have this. Louisiana's governor wants a live tiger back at LSU football games.
I love this.
What
I mean,
could
I don't
possibly
like LSU,
go wrong?
But that seems awesome.
Let's bring back whooping cough and live jungle cats at football games.
Does the University of Colorado still have a buffalo at their games?
Let's look that up because didn't want to escape and it was kind of like, maybe this isn't the best idea. Governor Jeff Landry confirmed his support on Tuesday of restarting the tradition of bringing Louisiana State University's live tiger mascot onto the football field ahead of home games. If you're wondering, it has been nearly a decade since a real live Bengal tiger has been rolled out in a cage under the lights of Death Valley, LSU's famed Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge. University officials have not publicly said whether they are willing to revive the tradition, but that did not stop Landry from sharing his own opinion when asked by reporters. I think the opportunity to bring our mascot back onto the field is an unbelievable opportunity, he said. PETA strongly disagrees.
Oh, whatever. Go away, PETA.
Quoting here from Landry, everyone that has some anxiety over this needs to calm down. For years, the school's live mascot would ride through the stadium in a travel trailer pulled by a pickup with several LSU cheerleaders riding on top before home games. Before entering the stadium, the tiger nicknamed Mike, would be parked next to the opponent's locker room, forcing the visiting team to pass by. At one time, the tiger would be prodded until it roared. I don't
now
like this.
That
I don't
is
like
not
this.
Okay, PETA, you can come back into the conversation.
By the early 2000s, the veterinarian school there stopped allowing the tiger to be prodded. Instead,
agreed,
a stuffed tiger doll was waved in front of the tiger until it roared. It was actually,
I like that. That's much
yes,
better.
And it was actually the caretakers, you guys, for the veterinary school that decided to stop bringing the tiger into the state. Now, why they still have the tiger, I mean, it just seems like not.
Georgia has a bulldog, and that bulldog,
that's
by
different.
The way,
that's a
is
dog. Come
absolutely
on.
Cared for to the nth degree. The University of Colorado still has a live buffalo. They are on Ralphie number 6. He is the 6th rendition of Ralphie the Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Ralphie number 5 is still alive, but got too old to be doing runs.
UT still has a UT still has a Longhorn.
Yeah.
And that Longhorn still appears on the field before football games. Okay.
We got rid of war paint.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
That was not because we were abusing the horse, but for different reasons.
When we get back, we're going to update everybody on the cornhole tournament. We want you to throw your hat in the ring on this. If you are a casual player, if you are a professional player with sponsors and all of those things, come join us at Serve, which, my gosh, I love that place, by the way. Their tacos are incredible. Yes, it is normally a pickleball space, but we are going to play cornhole there, and we're going to tell you how to get involved straight ahead. You're listening to Dana and Parks.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.